morning, everyone. So I'm not sure if everyone has the monitoring report in front of them. So there's the progress report from the top source and then the main monitoring report is behind us. So to kick off on the report, on page 3, we've given an overview of the market activity up to the end of September, which is the period the report covers. So in terms of what was going on in markets over this recent period, what really has dominated the outlook has been the ongoing trade tensions between US and China. That's continued to create a lot of volatility in the markets. And alongside that, expectations of a slowdown or kind of weaker outlook for growth in the economies. And alongside that, we've also seen reductions in some of the inflationary pressures in the markets as well. So in general, people are expecting lower inflation, lower growth. And what this has driven has really been a change in interest rate policy. So in the UK, it's not much of a change. They're kind of lower for longer. I don't know what the phrase is now, but it's lower for a long time. It's continuing. But in the US, there was a bit of a shift where we had seen interest rate rises, and that actually has turned the opposite way. We've seen interest rate cuts. So what's resulted from that is the performance you see on the left-hand side, where the kind of equity markets have kind of just about kind of kept up pace. They've produced some positive returns over the last quarter, still strong over the 12 months, but the outlook is now a lot weaker. Part of the movements in interest rates have been what sustained that equity performance, so the cuts in interest rate policy has really kind of helped sustain equity markets and prevented any kind of sharp falls, although there has been volatility. The impact though of those kind of lower growth expectations, the cuts in interest rates, is that bond yields have fallen again, and that means positive returns from bonds, potential increase in the value of your liabilities as a result of that, but certainly the bond assets you hold will perform positively as a result. So I see that's the picture in terms of the recent outlook, so still some positive returns, but it's the outlook for growth is becoming kind of more and more subdued based on the kind of outlook in some of the economic indicators. That's reflected in page 4 of our report, where we give our short to medium term outlook on different asset classes. And looking at this, you might be feeling quite depressed in terms of nothing is shouting out to us as being particularly attractive. So we have kind of ratings that go from attractive or very attractive all the way down to cautious or very negative. And what you'll see is that most of them remain pretty cautious or negative. That the shift, the change over the last quarter has been on equities, where we have kind of downgraded that to be a bit more cautious, moving away from just a neutral outlook. I'd say on the upside, at the moment we're going through or about to go through the strategy review process, and part of that will be to consider the range of asset classes that you're investing in at the moment, but also potential new opportunities, some of which might not have quite such a negative outlook. So I think there's a good opportunity here to kind of look at what else is out there and find some new opportunities. On the following page, page 5, we set out the asset allocation and where you are relative to your strategic target. So positive note, given what happened in markets, that the size of the assets of the fund has grown over the last quarter, so now just shy of 650 million as at the end of September. In terms of relative weightings, so strong performance from some of the equity markets and your managers in particular when we go through this, which has resulted in the relative weightings changing even further, such that you are even more overweight to Newton as at the end of September relative to your target and underweight to the rest of the mandates. There's a subsequent paper in the agenda for today where, based on that divergence from target, some rebalancing was agreed to basically take some money down out of the Newton equity allocation and reinvest it in some of the other asset classes to address that deviation from target. So overall, the fund actually benefited from being overweight to Newton as they performed strongly, and that comes through in the overall performance, with the fund returned 3.2% over the quarter relative to the benchmark of 2.7%. So 0.5% over that quarter, and again, longer term performance still would be strong. The following page just really shows a page six, so there's a similar position at the manager level again, but we also include the kind of high level ratings of managers, but I'll actually cover them in some of the subsequent pages, so we'll go into more detail on each of the mandates. Page seven has the high level performance summary at the manager level. So to pick up some headlines from there, so your UK equity manager, Vegetti, was marginally behind benchmark over the quarter, but they have struggled over the last 12 months in particular, and again, we'll go into that in more detail. Newton, a kind of stronger performance, ahead of benchmark by 0.5% over the quarter, and the last 12 months has been a strong period for them, 1.4% ahead of their benchmark. And that's helped to recover some of the weaker performance they had prior to the last year. So, and that's, while the three-year numbers for Newton are still behind, the longer-term numbers are back in positive territory due to the strong recent performance. Bailey Gifford has been consistently strong relative to their LIBOR plus benchmark, so ahead over the quarter, but also over 12 months, 3 and 5 years. And again, Schroders, your property manager, and also your fixed income manager, kind of steady performance across the board over the recent and longer terms. And so that's resulted in total fund performance being ahead of benchmark over the last quarter, but the Magedi performance over the last year has kind of brought that down to the target. The next few pages go into the managers in more detail. So we start with Magedi. So there is some notable changes in terms of the way that the mandate runs, some turnover and portfolio management is something that we are keeping an eye on. They are still rated as one of our preferred UK equity managers, but we are just keeping an eye on some of the personnel changes there. In terms of the performance, it's a broad, just marginally behind over the quarter, but weaker over the last 12 months. And this has tended to be because they've been quite cautiously positioned in the current market environment. And what's happened is that with the kind of supportive interest rate policy, actually some of the UK markets have continued to perform well. So their cautious positioning has been against them and has driven a lot of that underperformance. We're not unduly concerned by that. We understand that that cautious style will have struggled in this recent condition. And we're comfortable that you're being cautiously positioned in the current environment still makes sense as we move into whatever political situations might emerge and the impact that they might have on the market. So behind over the year, but we're still kind of comfortable that there's a good reason based on the way that position for that performance, and we're comfortable that they maintain some of those positions. Newton on the following page, is positively rated, but we do have them on watch at the moment. The reason for that is outlined in the kind of first set of comments where since the new CIO, Kurt Custard, came into the business, they've been consolidating some of their equity products, they've been reviewing some of the teams, and so there has been a little bit of a turnover in personnel. So again, it's something that we're keeping a close eye on, and that's why they're on watch at the moment. But they're still rated positively. As I say, their performance has been strong, particularly over the last 12 months, and particular holdings such as Apple that's performed well. We do note that there's an increasing focus on responsible investment. They have a holding Shell that's performed well. Clearly, an important factor here is where they do own, any company that they own, that they're engaging with the company, thinking about how they're voting on your behalf as an owner of those companies. So again, particular scrutiny on the active equity managers where they're holding companies that they are engaging with management and they're comfortable, particularly in areas like oil and gas, that they're aware of your plans for transitioning under the new pathways and climate targets. The next manager is Bailey Gifford's Diversified Growth Fund. Again, strong performance here relative to the target and strong absolute performance relative to their LIBOR plus benchmark. A lot of some of the recent performance related to to their commodities holdings that performed well, although they have since kind of driven some of those back after increases in prices. One of the kind of negatives, I think, to watch out for is that they do have holdings in something called insurance-linked securities. And this is kind of packaged up reinsurance risk on things like, basically things like catastrophe risk and natural disasters. And clearly, over the recent periods, we have seen kind of more kind of fires in the US, hurricane activity that can impact on some of those insured risks. So it's good because it's quite diversifying relative to normal financial markets like equities, but we are conscious of whether some of the risks related to those reinsurance markets is changing, given quite an impact. So it's a slight detractor, but overall the performance has been strong over the kind of recent periods and over the long term. The Schroders property mandate, I see, marginally ahead over benchmark and ahead over longer term. The outlook within the property market in the UK is still relatively subdued, and we are still seeing this kind of secular or sectoral shift away from retail into more industrial areas like warehouses and logistics, and that's a continuing trend that we expect to see. Given the outlook, the biggest part of the return from properties due to the income stream on the rental income, and that's why property is still quite an attractive diversifying asset class alongside your equities, because it has that strong income component, even if the outlook for capital values in the property market is a bit weaker than the current climate. So they have imagining some of the risk, kind of selling down some holdings within the portfolio in the recent period with a view to getting your opportunities to make purchases as they see opportunities arise in the coming year. And then finally, Schroders fixed income, again, outperforming over the short and medium and longer term. A significant part of the outperformance came from being longer duration, so that's having a greater sensitivity to interest rate movements. So with interest rates falling, as they were kind of overweight to interest rate risk, that's a positive through the outperformance, particularly positions within the US bond market, where we saw the shift in interest rate policy and a move down in bond yields. And that generated the majority of the positive performance for the Schroders mandate. There were some kind of positions with inflation that detracted from performance, and they're managing their positions here, but overall, strong performance, a lot of driven by that duration position. So those were the kind of key points I wanted to bring out, and I'm happy to speak. Any questions?
On page 5, I understand the index link gilt bit. I don't understand the next three sections, but I do understand the bottom one about cash strategies. Sterling non-government bonds, is there anybody else who understands? When I say jargon, you know, I'm a normal counselor, I just don't understand. I just see the word sterling. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that, what you're trying to get over to us, please?
We hope to run an engagement session at some point with the committee. Unfortunately, not today, we're going to reach out, but part of that will be to kind of go through the asset classes, kind of, you know, make sure everyone understands all the components of your strategy and try and get through some of that jargon. So sterling non-government bonds is, so you have bonds issued by the UK government, which we refer to as gilts, and some of them are inflation linked, so index linked gilts. So these will be bonds issued by non-government, so not issued, when we say non-sterling, so not issued by the UK government, so issued by the US, issued by the European Central Bank, or say issued by the German government, French government. So that's what we mean by sterling non-government bonds. We also have a kind of corporate bonds, so bonds issued by private companies when they are kind of issuing debt as well. But that's
it. Thank you. I just have one more question. The price of oil, I mean, it was predicted that oil would go up to something like $100 a barrel, but in fact it slipped from 70 down to 60 point something. How much effect is that having globally? Because it means that if the cost of living and inflation doesn't go up so much because it's down to just over $60. Do you think that will continue?
So I think oil prices, firstly, are very hard to predict, and you know there are some equity managers where they've taken a just approach to not investing in companies where the price is so dependent on that commodity, because they can't predict which way it will go. I think a big part of it is the supply and demand balance, and clearly there's quite a lot of interaction at the moment. Some of the political unrest in the Gulf, and within the US, there's the kind of shale gas as well, and in terms of trying to increase the supply. But at the same time, you have governments looking at kind of CO2 emissions, the climate pathway initiatives to actually kind of limit these. So I'd say it's difficult. It's still very hard to predict the way the oil prices will go. Clearly, there's still some way off the highs that they were just a couple of years ago, or the levels of a couple of years ago. And that's, you know, I talked about the low level of inflation that we're seeing. At the moment, the oil price is going up a little bit, but it's still kind of a lot lower than it was a couple of years ago. And so those inflationary pressures are still actually quite low. I suppose the challenge will be as we kind of transition away from oil and gas, what happens then in terms of oil prices, and whether that pushes through inflation in different ways into the economy.
Thank you, Chair. Can I first say thank you for the way the report's written. It's really clear, easy to understand. I wish ours was in colour, so we could see the colourful charts. But so thank you for the way the report's written. My query is, on page 8 of the Majedi UK equity, I know the UK equity market is volatile, but I question the rating of preferred for Majedi, and I don't think their performance is very strong. I think it's a very bold preferred rating. Looking at the chart on the bottom, I don't think they are performing as perhaps as well as the preferred status would indicate.
So our ratings, we do try to take a number of considerations into account. Performance is one, but we don't try to be driven too much by recent kind of short-term performance, and where there are periods of underperformance or even overperformance, it's understanding what's driving that, and if we're happy that they are still investing the money on the basis that we would expect them to, and therefore we do believe that they deliberately employed a cautious strategy in the current market environment, and we're happy that they're applying that consistently. What's happened in markets means that they haven't kept up with the benchmark, but we're still comfortable that they are investing the way that we'd expect them to. And if we see markets kind of recover or the markets kind of react in the way that we'd expect them to, some of the uncertainty that's out there, that we would expect them to come good and some of that to be recovered. It's something that we do keep, you know, the purpose of this is to monitor that, and the extent to which, if that starts becoming a persistent factor, you know, you'll see, you know, going back in the chart with the bars, there are periods where we've had kind of 2-3 quarters of underperformance before, and they have recovered for that. If this persists, then this is something we keep under review and decide whether some actions needs to be taken. The other issue with the UK market is it's such a concentrated stock market. There's a handful of stocks that make up a really large part of the index. So whether you hold BP, Shell, Vodafone, really impacts on performance. So as an active manager, they would take quite strong views as to whether they hold some of these positions, and therefore that can be quite volatile in terms of performance as well.
So, thanks for that, I understand that. We're obviously not comparing it with anything. So how easy is it for us to have a comparison to other companies are doing this? If we can say that's good compared to others, it might make the rating a bit more understandable. It could be a sort of comparison.
That's what we pay them for. That's what they're presenting.
Okay,
here.
All right.
Anybody else? Yes, Councillor Garrett.
Thank you, Chair. Over the time that I've been on this committee and seen these reports, I've seen these commentaries about personnel changes. And you've just used a phrase that I half credits my understanding of why you bring these things to our attention. What is it? Why do you feel you bring these things to our attention? Is it because of their managerial skill, their analytical skills, or is it something tangible, that the degree to which they are good with their hunches or whatever? Or is it the disruptive effect, just generally, as somebody changes responsibility, something new comes in? I'd like to get an understanding of why these are important enough to be reported to us.
So I suppose there are a few different aspects you touched on there. So one is, when our research team go out and meet these managers, one is, do we think there's someone that's got, you know, something that others don't in terms of a key man, a kind of star investor, that they can try and identify trends or areas of market that are attractively valued. The other is, each of the different active managers will have a specific style of investing, and we want to make sure that anyone that comes into the team is consistently following that approach. That someone, you know, if you have a strong value manager, you don't bring someone to the team that's from a growth background and therefore isn't kind of applying the same process to how they look at stocks. So that's part of the consistency of the team. Do they actually fit well together? Are they providing something positive in terms of the challenge and debate within that organisation in terms of the analysis of the holdings, the stocks that they own? And then the third is that bit of disruption. You know, if someone leaves, does that mean that next quarter you're going to see, oh, I've got to this company and it's a really good company, do you want to come with me? And you find out half the team's gone now within the next 6 months. So it's that kind of making sure that there's that stability. A lot of that, when we look at the analysis and the ratings, is also going to be the ownership structure. You know, how focused are they on, say, global equities or UK equities as a business? How aligned are they with the success of the business and their clients' performance to make sure they're incentivized to kind of focus on that and have that alignment with it? Kind of a range of factors.
Can I just follow through on that? I can see how alignment's going to be one thing, as presumably you might divide something from somebody, an organisation recruiting somebody who are different. Gives a sense of where they may be going with other things. The flip side is, I guess you're looking at the degree to which there would be too much groupthink and not enough challenge. I think you could use the word challenge there. So I think I now have a better understanding of why it's important to that. Now, of course, I presume those who are doing this day to day very much will be looking at the business press, seeing who's moving where, and then the chatter and the gossip as to what this means and what people are hearing around water coolers that isn't actually necessarily printing somewhere. So that's very helpful to me, thank you.
I think a good example was in Newton when the new CIO first came in, where the portfolio holdings of Newton, so they, I think, target portfolio about 70 stocks, and that had grown to about 90, even 100. There wasn't, it felt like things had maybe just got a bit stale, there wasn't proper sale discipline on, you know, if something has started underperforming, they would just kind of hang on to it and hope that it'll come back. Whereas we have fresh pair of eyes said, right, this is not working out, we need to actually say, we'll sell this concentrated portfolio where we have the most conviction. So that's the kind of example of, you know, trying to combat the lack of challenge and making sure that the portfolios are managed consistently with the approach that you want.
And
Mike,
one quick question. On the Bailey Gifford, currently they're opening an office in Shanghai. How do you see that? Is that tapping into the Chinese market? Do other people have any of the other people like Schroders have a Chinese office? Why at this particular time? Is it because of bad US trade relations?
My understanding is just Bailey Gifford have traditionally had a reasonably high allocation to emerging market entities, including China, and it's just to kind of increase the research resource that they have in that area to to make sure they can fully understand the risks and the opportunities that are out there. Yeah, so Schroders, I think, have offices. They're quite a big global manager, so they have offices throughout the globe. Newton, I don't have a dedicated office there, so I think really different. It's partly reflecting on where they see most opportunities, and say emerging markets has been an area where they have been focused on, so it's just to give them that additional capability to research and resource the stocks in that area.
Any other questions? In that case, sorry, apologise.
Just a quick one from me. I wonder if you could comment on the extent to which you think that both Brexit and the US-China trade war is priced into the markets at the moment.
Just an easy one.
I guess for me, it's an indication of what we might expect in future reports, and it harks back to an extent to Councillor Braley's question about the performance of the Jetty and the extent to which you don't look back on relatively recent performance as a predictor of the future.
Over the last year, a couple of things, we have done some kind of scenario analysis for clients based on broadly four different political outcomes, particularly around Brexit, what we think is the most likely to happen. Not saying this would definitely happen. And so we had looked at, I think 12 months ago, we had soft Brexit, hard Brexit, and we changed that to having continued uncertainty. It was one of the new outcomes. And I think in general we still feel that markets are probably pricing in some kind of deal. So they're still not fully pricing in a hard Brexit, we don't think. And so there's probably, I'd say, the kind of consensus or the kind of market is pricing some kind of deal happening. So I think part of it is priced in some kind of negative impacts already priced in there. The extent of that is really hard to predict because it's such a binary outcome. I suppose that's kept on shifting as to whether it is binary because there's so many different potential outcomes that have been considered. The US-China trade war is exactly that is being reflected. I think that's a kind of moving, that's constantly shifting as we see more news arise. And it's hard to kind of second guess the market in terms of what's not already priced in, what's new news that's not already out there. So I think you have seen significant volatility, but I think we're still expecting that there will be some kind of ongoing trade relationship that it's not going to be really escalated and have a negative impact. So I think someone that's cautiously positioned like Majedi is probably in a good position if we do see a more negative outlook of what could happen either from the trade tensions or Brexit. So they have underperformed, but I think that when balanced, the market's probably pricing in something kind of reasonably benign happening, and therefore if we do see something more negative, I think we will be in a better position.
Can I just add something actually? Because I went to the Traders conferences recently, and these questions were all brought up. And what they were saying were that they weren't unduly worried about Brexit because we had 3.5 years of it. 3.5 years of political turmoil, uncertainty, and now having a general election. Who knows what's going to happen? What they were concerned about more importantly, and they were saying, was being affected in the city, were the trade wars. Because you've got the biggest capitalist country versus the biggest communist central planned economy. And it was not necessarily having an impact on the US, because the US has an enormous amount of wealth and is propping up the sectors which are having difficulty with it. But China was suffering because of the central planned, and it doesn't have supply chains like a capitalist country does. So it was desperately, China's desperately trying to find another areas to export because it is solely reliant on its export market. America has other things to profit up there more. So they're focusing very heavily on the trade wars, and they felt that was much more concern than us bumping along, know, years and years, it seems, with Brexit. Also, as well, Brexit, everybody, you know, banks and the big PLCs have prepared and have got resources and the money, so the small businesses weren't able to prepare themselves in the event of another deal and crashing out. But it's the trade that's the stress and risk.
In terms of the relative scale of those risks, I agree, it's the kind of global tensions that are more pressing. One of the other offsets as well is if the UK does have some kind of more negative outlook, what we've seen over the last couple of years is that the currency movement will also impact on some of those UK companies. So we'd expect further sterling depreciation potentially if you have a negative outcome there. But in terms of UK companies, a lot of them have earnings that are in other currencies. So actually, the UK market still holds up reasonably well because of the currency impact. There is a slightly different consideration there, which we'll come to in the strategy review, is how much you have in UK equities and how much you have in overseas equities. Again, that's something we'll discuss. But yeah, so the relative scale, the big focus on those global trade tensions.
Thank you, David. We'll now move on to item 6.